welcome to the third episode of the all-new GAK Guitar Shop podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, who is joining me today.
Hello, I'm Luke.
And what do you do?
I'm the guitar buyer, or one of the two guitar buyers for GAK.
And who else is joining me?
Hello, I'm Joss, and I look after the YouTube.
Excellent. How are you doing today, gents?
Good.
Are we all okay?
Excellent. Very good.
Yeah, good.
Cool.
Looking forward to the weekend.
There you go.
Friday,
it is nearly the weekend.
Friday.
We normally do this on a Thursday, but we are recording a day late because Luke was unavailable yesterday. So we're recording on the Friday. We were going to have a fourth member for the first time this week. I promised James Singer, who is our Fender expert in the store. In fact, we'd written a whole podcast around having James Singer.
So this might be a little shorter than usual.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine. But James will be with us next week, and we will be talking about all the new Gretsches and the new Fenders and stuff like that. So that would be cool. But I guess I should start this podcast by asking you guys what you've checked out this week. Luke, how has your week in purchasing been? Has there been any cool new stuff that's turned up and caught your eye?
Well, yeah, I mean, sort of the first thing we had land this week was the LX1E Ed Sheeran X's.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to appeal to everyone, but really rare. Really hard to come by anyway. I had a load of those land. It's the first time we had them land that we had free stock, because the first lot we had were just totally pre-sold.
All pre-ordered. Well, I mean, you know, you say it doesn't appeal to everyone, but, and yeah, that is because
they don't, you know, appeal to everyone.
Ed Sheeran's annoying. But we've got to keep a clean rating on this podcast.
Possibly not one for a guitar nerdy sort
of. Yeah, exactly. But that said, his guitar did make it into the top 10 in the Gear of the Year last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just because, for the reason that, whatever you think of Ed Sheeran, he was bringing guitar to a new market.
Yeah.
And I think by introducing an affordable signature acoustic, I think it opened, it was interesting to people who were starting out, I think, a lot of...
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, when he sort of got big a few years back, the world went mental for loop stations.
Yeah.
Just everyone coming in with tiny Martins,
yeah, you're absolutely
wanting
right.
to play through a loop station.
Yeah, it's weird because people have been doing it for years. I mean, obviously loopers have been there for years before, but there have been plenty of acoustic artists who'd who'd been doing it for a long time before that. He was just, I guess, the first one people took note of.
I mean, Katie Tunstall.
Katie Tunstall was the obvious one.
With
I just can't remember
her name. Yeah.
Oh, the Akai.
She used
the
Akai. Head Rush.
Oh.
Those things are wicked. Have you ever tried the... Because they've got 8 outputs for all the individual delays. So you can
that's
run them
amazing.
You can run them into 8 different amps and have a different delay going through 8 amps. Sadly, any one point, I've only ever had 4 or 5 amps.
The loop is really short on those, though, isn't it? It's what do you get, like 9 seconds or 6 seconds? Something like that.
I mean, it's long enough.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those early doors loopers, though, isn't it?
It just looks really clunky.
Yeah, it takes up a lot of space. Yeah, it was great pedal, though, and really affordable when they were about as well. I miss the Akai Head Rush.
But the other thing I was sort of, since we've talked about Ed a little bit, I think it's quite interesting that he started playing that weird sort of Clapton-style crash art, like Strat, for a bit, and now he seems to be picture playing loads of PRSs.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah. Someone
mentioned this actually to me, that he was playing PRSs, and and that was a reason behind all of a sudden PRS being cool again.
That's intriguing. I mean.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of guitar players out there now playing PRS guitars.
Yeah, true.
I'm not putting
this solely at the feet of Ed Sheeran,
he's responsible for all of modern music. Yeah.
God damn you, Ed. But PRS had certainly, I think, waned over the last, I don't know, 5 years, decade or so in popularity, and they certainly seem to be back on the up.
Yeah. Definitely, and I think they're sort of the 30th are quite interesting, and I think we might be restocking them again at some point.
Loads of PRS. What about you, Joss? How have you checked out anything cool this week?
Yeah, definitely, I've checked out quite a few bits.
How did videoing go? Have you done many video demos? Because I think last time we spoke on the podcast, you were bogged down by doing a million and one Pro Audio video demos.
Mm. Yeah, well, they're already edited and finished, and they've been put on the back burner for sort of updating and releases and all that sort of stuff. So I decided to get stuck into some guitar videos this week. I done the Jackson Soloist True Blue USA Custom Shop model.
Didn't that make you famous?
No, it didn't make me famous. I wish it made me famous. I just one video get me famous done.
Well, explain what Luke means.
I got an email about 12 o'clock at night from our sales manager of our company. And
The sales manager of our company is a DJ, by the way. I have no idea what he was doing on the Jackson website at 12 o'clock
apparently
at night.
There was no football. So he was on the Jackson website.
Yeah. The first thing I thought about that was it was on your Instagram.
Yeah.
That was...
Well, I got an email about 12 o'clock at night from our sales manager, and he just said, very, very cool. And I followed the link, and there I was for the whole day, apparently, on the front page of Jackson's website.
Yeah, that was cool. What were you demoing in that video?
That was the USA Custom Shop, the True Blue Soloist.
Oh, right, yeah.
Seymour Duncan's Ebony Fretboard, Floyd Rose, just the, you know, the whole shebang.
Sounds like a Jackson.
Yeah, definitely.
We seem to be getting a lot of things through like that.
Well, I've taken some photos of some really, really cool Custom Shop Jacksons. We had the Flying V Two-Face model, which I believe is already sold.
What was that? That was like half black, half white.
Yeah, half black, half white. It's actually, I got a picture of me holding it on my Instagram. It's really cool.
As a man that likes white and black guitars, who also doesn't like pointy things, I was really confused by that.
Yeah.
I didn't know whether I was coming or going.
Oh, God. Yeah. So there was that model, obviously the True Blue. And we also had what I took photos of this morning. No, yesterday morning, sorry, was the USA Master Build Mike Shannon Soloist. EMG guitar, ebony fretboard in this beautiful, like, dark red Floyd Rose. But it's not recessed, so you can only dive. You can't go up.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's like a proper anniversary, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, proper 30th anniversary model.
Compound fretboard and all that jazz? Jackson, do that on everything?
They are compound radiuses, but they're more extreme. I think they're 12 to 16 instead of...
Was it sort of 10 9, to 14 yeah, or something?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
On a lot of fenders and
exactly,
custom
shop
stuff.
Yeah. So it's more on the extreme side of things. So I think they're more completely flat up at the other end. So when you're doing your shreddery and your sweet picking and all that aggressive vibrato.
I do a lot of sweet picking.
Yeah. You love to sweet pick.
Definitely do. Because I don't know if you're being sarcastic, but I definitely do.
Yes. Lucas, I mean, I am being really sarcastic.
Yeah, I love to sweep. And I love to play incredibly fast.
Sometimes I don't change my picking direction when I change between three strings, and I call that sweet picking.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say that's what that is. All of these guitars are great. The Jackson Custom Shop at the moment, especially this 30th anniversary Mike Shannon model, is just, you know, incredible.
I'd like to sit down and play that against a modern soloist.
Because
they've got like the old style Floyd with the brass thumb screws.
It's like black hardware with the brass.
Yeah, and the EMGs instead of all the like the new sort of JB, and is it JB in 59?
Most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of the time.
And like three toggle switches, like proper old school, like it looks like it's straight out of Def Leppard video.
It does.
There seems to be a lot more old school stuff coming through again. I mean, I've definitely seen an increase in guitars, certainly guitars that we're stocking that have Floyd Roses on them. It's such a hardtail market at the moment.
It's because everyone wants to do these horribly low tunings.
Well, yeah, so. Of course, which is actually a question later on in our podcast.
What's that?
How about that? And also this week, this morning, we finally got round to shooting the video for the Roland Blues Cube.
I did, yeah. We finished it about an hour ago.
Which one did we do?
We went for the 112 artist model.
Right, okay, so that's the 80 watt
at full capacity it's 80 watts 45 15 0.5 switchable.
And how did you find it? I know we've laboured on about the blues.
I mean, now I've spent some time with it. I did throw a custom shop Telecaster through it, though, so we're talking, like, you know, quality of guitar here. It was a custom deluxe model. After actually sitting down and having a go on it, it is truly a remarkable piece of gear.
Yeah.
I mean it.
Was that the satin custom deluxe
yeah.
with the really figured neck
yeah.
that was sitting leaning on the wall earlier that I ended up playing when I was trying to try out some cabs and some ex-demo stuff?
Yes, that must have been it.
Yeah, it was really nice.
It's a cool guitar, right?
I'd like to make a note to any customers thinking about buying that. We don't leave $2,500 guitars just lent up against
the wall. I think he meant lent up against the wall in its case, in a box.
Yeah, it was in a box. Right. I mean, I had to really dig around to get it out.
Good, good. Just as long as we can clear that one up.
You don't like it, do you?
I don't. I don't like those sort of tops when they're satin.
It is a flame maple top on a Telecaster.
Yeah. Flame tops in satin just always look a little bit ESP to me, and I'm not a big ESP fan.
I think I'm with you on the satin finish. It was more just the neck on that thing that I sort of grabbed.
Bigger, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like big and chunky, and it just felt incredible.
Yeah.
Like,
nice low action. Yeah. I gave it a quick setup with the tools that it comes with before I played it, just so I could have a playable guitar to demo the Blues Cube with.
Right.
And I only needed a couple of tweaks, and it just plays awesome now. Feels like it's got tens on it, but they feel really slinky and nice. So,
is that just because you wanted super low action?
It is, yes. It is.
As a man with very lazy hands, I'd be inclined to agree.
Yeah. And with a single core guitar, when you've got that low action, I think you get that, I don't know how to explain the sound, but you know the
spanky.
The typical Stratton Tele wrangling against the fret noise.
Yeah.
That's I thought that very much when I could hear the
fret clack.
Well, yeah, exactly. Bleeding from your headphones today as you were editing that video. What I could hear was exactly that.
Staring at myself every single day playing guitar.
It's all you've ever wanted.
It's making me go insane. Like, I'm nitpicking my playing to the point of looking at a video and going, I don't even know if I should put that up.
But holding that mirror up, though, is one of the best things you can do for your playing.
It is. Mm. But now I've gone from practicing every night from, like, 3 hours to, like, practicing. The past 2 months I've been practicing for, like, 5 hours every night on guitar. Yeah. Because I'm so afraid of putting a video up and someone going, well, this guy's rubbish.
See, I went the other way. When I started doing loads of home recording a few years back, I realised I couldn't actually play any of the fast stuff, so I just stopped bothering. I just went, right, now I'm going to play block chords. And I'm going to really nail those to the drum part.
Oh, it's
that's much easier that way. It doesn't require 5 hours. It takes 10 minutes.
I think that's the only thing with the videos, isn't it? I've just got it's a real challenge on my behalf for myself. It's the first time I've ever sat down recently and looked at these videos. Now I've realised how many videos of me there are up on YouTube, and people like Jackson sharing my video and stuff, and looking at the how many people over the world are watching the videos on the YouTube, like, analytics sort of things, like the specifications of where people are, and I'm looking at, like, all over America, Australia, and it's scary to think that all these people are just watching the videos, and, you know, some of them are going, oh, that's really cool, and then the thought of some people going, who is this dude?
Yeah, what is he doing? That note was wrong.
Yeah.
Well, is he playing out, or was that a dud? Oh, I don't know. I was doing that, the Fuzz Face Mini Band of Gypsies pedal demo, I advise no one to watch, by the way. And anyway, we'd done like 6 or 7 pedals, and my bag of 4 riffs had very quickly run out. So I was sitting trying to find anything to play, cobbled something together, edited it, we put it up, and then someone a few months later commented on the YouTube channel something along the lines of, what I really like about this demo is you've got really into the atonal Dada-esque territory that Hendrix explored whilst playing live. Good work to you. I'll be back to check this demo out again.
That's amazing.
I can't remember the quote verbatim, but that's pretty dead on.
That is.
That's amazing.
And I was happy with that.
Yeah,
I got into the Dada-esque territory of Hendrix.
Well done. You did a good job. Well, segueing neatly out of, well, slightly less neatly because we went off on one there. Segueing slightly less neatly out of talking about that flame-topped Telecaster and into the realms of custom shop Fender. This week we've had an awful lot of cool new custom shop stuff hit the shelf.
Yes. Well, it's an even more neat segue from Telecaster. There's the Telecaster / Esquire we've had in.
Is this the Sunburst one?
No, Dirty White Blonde.
Oh, well, there's that one and the Sunburst one.
There's a Sunburst as well.
Yeah, the 55, yeah?
Yeah.
I took a photo. I've only taken a photo of the Sunburst one.
Right, okay.
At the moment.
It's the Dirty White that I'm interested in.
No, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it in purpose. Purses? I haven't seen it in purpose.
I haven't seen it on purpose. I just stumbled across it.
I mean, I just out of the corner of my eye, it was there.
Today, I'm only looking at guitars in my peripheral vision.
So this will be our second Esquire that we've got at the moment, which is rather unusual. But we never have Esquires.
The one I'm looking at, or the one I was checking out earlier today, comes with two scratch plates.
Both of them do. Yeah.
Yeah, it's loaded up, one with a pickup and one without, and you can either change it whichever way you want.
Yeah, because even the Esquires when they were made originally, that they had
the switch.
They had the cutout already.
Oh yeah.
Under the plate. Yeah.
Routed it out. It's a guy that used to come into my old shop actually wanted to do he called it a stealth Esquire, where he put a Texas Special pickup underneath the scratch plate.
But it was actually working, right?
Yeah, it was working. Yeah. I mean, I say it was working. I mean, it was really quiet and sounded terrible. It was a really bad idea. But Fender have done it and made it work, and he thought he'd try, and it sort of didn't, but it was a valiant effort, so well done that man.
I mean, it's a cool idea.
Excellent. Yeah, I do really like Esquires. I wish Fender would do a standard model.
So do I.
Or like,
I mean, an American
classic player.
Yeah,
I would do.
Yeah,
I just,
because they done the 50s one, didn't they? Done the 50s Esquire, but I did not like the way that felt or looked.
It's just, sort of single pickup guitars are a weird one, because we all talk about how much we like them, but very few people actually own them.
I know. It's because of, as you know, clearly stated, it's only going to do one thing really well. But I think that's the draw for it. Like, I see someone like Billy Gibbons. Do you know what I mean? I mean, he has only got one sound. When I saw him live, he genuinely plugged in every guitar he had and they all sounded the same. But
8-gauge strings.
Exactly.
Right. But is it impractical? I mean, from a bass player's perspective, most of us have... Most basses, generally speaking, are probably one pickup, and if they are two pickup, we normally just always have both of them on.
No one really listens, though, do they?
All right, fair enough. But I mean, we would use pedals to define the difference in our sound. Is a single pickup guitar really that limiting?
Think about a Telecaster's sound or a Strat sound.
It's because single pickups. Guitars tend to be bridge pickups, which just are too aggressive to use for everything, and you end up really cutting through. Mm. Like, there are times when I need to change in my band between neck and bridge just because I'm crossing over with the synth too much, and the neck pickup gets really muddy and lost, so I'll go to the bridge. But then if I use that when the synth isn't sort of filling things out, then everything sounds really thin and horrible. Mm. So you sort of do, and I don't know if it's just maybe that our ears have gotten used to that sort of switch or what, but it's different. Plus, as guitarists, we'll switch between lead and rhythm.
Yeah, of course.
And if you think about it, I mean, if you're playing like a chunky heavy rhythm part, you always want the bridge pickup, because you've got all the sort of harmonics bouncing back on the string across the pickup, which is why the bridge pickup sounds so much more aggressive. But then you go into a solo and you want to drop all of those out, because otherwise it's going to sound really nasty.
Would you consider then the Gibson Les Paul Junior to be an exception to that rule on account of the P90 or the pickup placement?
Yeah, P90s are really mid-rangey and honky, so they don't have so much of that.
Exactly, but I would think of the Les Paul Junior as being a great all-rounder, despite having one pickup.
Yeah,
as maybe the I forget its name. Was it the Liberace?
Do you remember the Luchador. Cabernetas and the Luchadors and stuff.
Yeah, they did single TV Jones pickup.
Yeah, the Luchador in the store.
The Luchador was a Jaguar body, is that
no,
right?
No, the Luchador is the Strat-shaped one.
Oh, it's the Strat-shaped one. Yeah. And the Baratch is the Jaguar shape, is that
right? The upside-down Jaguar.
Upside-down Jaguar.
No, those upside-down Jaguars and the Jazzmaster were just Jazzmaster. Incredible.
Yeah.
Awesome. You couldn't play any lead on them, because when you got to the 12th fret, it was just like wood. Like, gung, gung, gung.
I love the way they're cut. as well, the because it's quite sharp on the corners, but they still put contours. They're not slabs as such.
No.
But there are no rounded cuts around them. They really look as if they've been sawn into shape.
It does. Yeah. It genuinely looks like you could just go make one, because there's no binding, there's nothing. It's just cut out and then shaped and then done.
I love about that about them. They always seem like such an authentic kind of thing. I know they're not actually in any way, or they're a modern creation, but they have such a
like the name states, they look like something that's just come out of like the rough area of Mexico.
Yeah, it's
or
like
something,
a Mexican wrestler. They're all named after types of Mexican wrestlers, aren't
but they? Then I mean, obviously they filter down, and Fender did the whole Cabernita series, which has gone right down to Squire.
Yeah,
but when they first brought out the Cabernita Tellys for the 60th anniversary,
the Telebration stuff,
all that stuff. We had one, and someone came in and tried it, because they sort of just liked how it looked. And I was sort of thinking, TV Jones pickups, telly, that's going to go to a country player. And he was like, yeah, no, I want to try it through a dual rec. And I was like, all right, I mean, this isn't going to work. Plugged it in, it sounded absolutely incredible.
Wow.
Like, really gnarly, really aggressive, really bitey, just like perfect for metal if you've got someone else doing like the normal metal tone.
Sure.
And he went for it. It was just like, mate, that sounded out.
Well, he bought the American one.
Yeah.
That's also. It's a shame that they don't do an American series of that as a standard one now.
Yeah.
Because the Cabernitas out of the Mexican range are selling all the time.
Well, I was going to say, surely the two in the Squire Vintage Modified series are two of the best value for money guitars that you can pick up.
100% out.
Yeah. I mean, a Squire with a Bigsby on it, for goodness sake.
Yeah, totally.
That's amazing. Yeah. If you haven't seen that particular model of Cabernito, it's a TV Jones pickup in the neck, and then a Tele pickup in the bridge with the
B5 style.
Yeah, and Bigsby. It's sub £300. Am I right?
Yeah, somewhere around there. I'd forget.
Yeah, I forget where Fender price points are, but a ridiculously small sum of money for such a unique and incredible guitar. Only available in black. Which, of course, is what they did all the custom shop.
That's obviously the best colour.
For those, yes, it definitely is. It definitely is. And they've got like a series of bases as well, Cabernita bases with a single.
Do you remember the TV Dusty
Jones
Hill
so,
one?
Or they're not called TV Jones. What do they call them when they're in Fenders? Fidelitrons.
Fidelitrons, yeah.
Do you remember the Dusty Hill one? The Dusty Hill signature?
Yeah, the Dusty Hill.
How cool was that with the upside down headstock?
We had two of those, so 55... I think it was 51 cut body,
the gold.
But made out of mahogany with a gold top, so basically a Les Paul bass, with just a proper sort of ordinary single coil 51 style P bass pickup in the middle, and and a reverse headstock.
I wasn't sure about the reverse headstock.
Oh, dude,
no?
I thought
man,
it was
I love
so
reverse
cool.
headstocks. Like I like them on N4s.
I like them on
everything.
RGRs, Ibanez's, Jackson's.
Odor England's thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're great on metal guitars, but on those, they just kind of made me think of... Well, I mean, it's not a bad association, but they just make me think of the Hamsters, because the Hamsters bassist used to play an upside down, like, Sims custom thing, and they instantly take me back to there. Not that that's a bad thing, but no. I think it
looks like a non-branded instrument, do you know what I mean? Like a custom build something.
Which those are, I guess. I mean, that would make sense.
So what else have we had on the custom shop front at the moment over the last little while? Other than the...
Well, was that Dale Wilson Strat? Mm-hmm. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet.
Yeah, I only found about this today.
Yeah, well, I was
Do we know
through,
a spec for it?
Shawbucker. It looks like it's going to have a really figured maple neck.
Right.
Finish? But again, teal green over sunburst.
Oh,
really,
amazing.
Really beaten. Like proper heavy
That
red,
one,
heavy
I've red. Seen the picture of
yeah,
it. I've
the
seen
one where
the
it looks like
it.
It's sitting on someone's bed.
Who is he?
Dale Wilson.
Yeah.
He's a custom shop builder.
Yeah. Oh, so he's just one of the builders?
Yeah, that's right. It's like a master build thing.
Do you remember the...
Not to be confused
neck?
With Dale Winton.
Yes, of course. That's what I was thinking of.
So it's not him?
No, not Dale Winton.
Damn, that's a shame.
Yeah, I probably won't
buy it. But yeah, Dale Wilson built that mahogany body TV yellow rosewood neck telly with the P90 in the neck we had a while back.
Oh!
The three of us, three different members of staff, all emailed the company owner and said, can we buy this, please?
Yeah.
And obviously he said, no, that's a really nice guitar. We've been waiting for about 2 years. So none of us bought it, and someone got to buy that. Mm. That guitar was incredible.
It didn't last very long.
Wasn't it not very long at all for a...
Oh, really?
Probably...
I don't know. Someone got it, and I was so jealous. Guitar was absolutely... That was the guitar that sent me on the mission to change the necks over on one of my Strats... Well, the neck over on one of my Strats to rosewood.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's solid rosewood, and it just felt absolutely out of this world.
What's happening with that guitar? Because you're not really playing it,
No, I can't get it right. It's just, it's sort of almost there. It looks incredible.
A solid rosewood neck is a very cool thing.
It's always going to be a cool thing, yeah.
It's a super light ash body.
Nitro finish as well.
Nitro finish, really beaten. It just sounds a little bit too clacky. And it's a little bit too much top end. And I just can't seem to get it to sit right.
Fair enough. How's the Telecaster?
Telecaster's going well. I mean, I haven't really played it.
Really?
Yeah. What?
You bought it like a month ago now.
Yeah, but I bought it as a spare. That's a backup. Look, I've already gone on enough about how much I love my Strat.
Yeah, that's the one. That's true. That's
my one. That's my guitar.
We'll wait and see. We'll wait and see. What about you, Joss?
I've had it for 14 years.
Jesus.
That is a long time. That is a long time to play one guitar. Most people
are more... I don't
think
I've ever had a guitar for that amount of time.
No, exactly. Maybe 14 months is probably the longest for you.
Yeah, probably.
It's the first guitar I've ever bought new and played the frets through on.
Wow.
Like, that seriously needs a refret now. It's like, that needs doing.
That's quite impressive.
Which makes me... if anyone's familiar, there's a Roland demo guy called Alex Hutchings.
Yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal player. If you're into jazz fusion, check him out. He's just out of this world. He turned up to do a demo once with an Ernie Ball Music Man, like an Axis. And he was just like, yeah, I am. Has anyone got any sandpaper? He was like, I was at a photo shoot the other day and I dropped my guitar on a rock. And I was thinking it's like forearm and he needs to just sand the finish back a bit because it's a bit rough. And he dropped the fret into a rock. And I was sort of looking at it going... I mean, dude, there's no fret left there. You've played that through entirely. That needs new frets. And he was like, nah, I'll just sand it down. So he just sanded the fret down with a bit of sort of 400 or 600 grit, sort of wet and dry, and then kept playing with a basically dead fret that didn't work for anyone else. I've never known anyone be able to play a guitar that was that broken.
And he could get a note out of it.
Yeah, he was fine.
He plays the lighter strings note to man as well, though.
He plays eight, but that's because he tunes differently.
He does, doesn't he? He tunes it up in fifths, the whole thing, right?
Yeah, like E, A, D, G, C, F.
Right.
So all the patterns are repeating. You don't need to change any chord shapes.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting thing to do.
He sounds lazy.
That is how I'd characterise his playing. Very lazy.
Lazy.
He didn't decide to play all the simple block chords when he couldn't keep in time with the drum bar. He's a phenomenal player. Absolute monster.
What about you, Joss? How are you getting on guitar-wise at the moment? How's your...
I'm already bored.
I knew it was only a matter. This is what I was so happy about having you on the podcast. Is I know there's always going to be a new guitar story, maybe every fortnight, which is good.
Well, I've moved aside my I've put to one side in the cases so I don't mess up. I've got my Les Paul Studio that cannot be sold because it's completely trashed anyway. I've got my Albert Lee and I've got my LSL and I've cased them up and I've put them to one side. And they're not being touched in terms of sales. Everything else I own, apart from the amps, obviously, I am getting rid of so I can purchase a new guitar. Which cannot be spoken of. Oh. And I am selling all my stuff. So that means my Yamaha SG, that's going.
What?
I only got it a couple of weeks ago.
Maybe less than a week ago, he was looking at getting a second Yamaha SG as a backup.
I know, and that would have been a bad move.
I really like the Yamaha SGs. I think they are very cool, but I think I would much rather see you on something else. I still reckon you should get something like a Jackson Custom Shop or a really high-end Dean or something.
That sort of stuff, apart from the Dean thing.
Dean do some cool
stuff. You really wanted one of those Jackie Vincents.
Yeah, there's two models. There's the Jackie Vincent and then there's the Rusty Cooley, the new exotic woods Rusty Cooley with the maple neck. Do you do Dean?
No.
The Rusty Cooley model and the Jackie Vincents. Those two guitars are incredible.
Jackie Vincent looks a bit weird.
But I can't own...
It's a purple guitar.
Yeah.
I own a purple guitar. I'm not against purple, but it just... It looks like back in the 80s when people used to shave down Strat bodies to make them smaller.
It is smaller.
It's got the shape like of all the old shave stuff, like the old, like Nuno, like the original N1.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. And that was cool when it was a... Don't roll your eyes at me. I've heard
Nuno,
you go on about Billy Sheehan.
I've got to stop the podcast here to make an important announcement.
The world doesn't need to know about Mike Portnoy Camp.
Yes. Oh, you know about it.
He got so excited and I poo-pooed the whole idea and he got so upset.
Yeah, but it's like $2,000.
Wait. Yeah, No one knows what we're talking about.
That's fine.
What we're talking about is the Winery Dogs Camp. I'm not saying the Winery Dogs are camp. I'm saying that there is a Winery Dogs camp, as in the...
You can go camp with the Winery Dogs.
With the Winery Dogs, which Billy Sheehan is a member of, along with two other people.
Richie Kotzen and
Mike Portnoy.
But Billy Sheehan, more importantly, you can go camping with them for 4 days. 4 days in a park just outside of New York. And for a very reasonable sum
it's just
of
on the side
about
of Central...
$2,000.
Yeah.
It's just outside of Central Park. Just like going for breakfast at their hotel every morning.
You get there and there's just sort of an itinerant camp set up.
Yeah.
Completely illegally.
Yeah.
No, I think I'd rather go to the New Forest.
4 days of Billy Sheehan.
I could go for many months for that amount of money in the New Forest.
$2,000, man.
Yeah. I think it's reasonable. Anyway, sorry, back on track.
Yeah, I think we've advertised the Winery Dogs camp enough.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you were talking about Nuno and that.
Oh, yeah. It's like they've sort of done the whole shaved body thing, which I think is cool when it's a shaved body. And obviously that's where the soloist shape came from and why the Strat shape evolved in the 80s and all that. But I don't know. I think maybe it's not a big fan. It's a bit try hard for my liking.
I'm discovering more and more that I really love Dean guitars. I just think they have some of the coolest headstocks, things like the hockey stick headstock, and their ordinary sort of, you know, six in a row headstock as well, I think looks amazing. I'm just really, really into the way they look.
I just think it's a shame. I love that company. Like, I've always loved that company and stuff like that. I just think it's when the owner leaves the company, then I don't think I can, like, I don't know, feel comfortable with the company anymore. Apart from Fender. Yeah. I don't play any Fender guitars.
I've heard talk that Orville Gibson doesn't own Gibson anymore.
I don't own any Gibson guitars.
No, I wasn't picking a hole with you. I was just making a facetious remark.
Yes, of course. But anyway, no, Rusty Cooley, awesome. Jackie Vincent, awesome. The rest of it, you know, only Dimebag can pull off.
Fair enough. From a bass perspective, I really love their Hillsborough, you know, poorly named from our perspective as a country, but still a really cool looking bass.
Well, I don't know it.
Oh, it's like, it's kind of one of their more rock and roll looking basses, which
is all
like
the other stuff is pretty straight laced.
Yeah. they're less metally, so it's okay. a more of a traditional style headstock. So sort of four in a row, and it's the big Shamrock tuners, and it's a cool looking headstock, which I like. Those sort of oversized,
the Dean logo
sort of paddle
on
headstocks.
The Dean logo is different as well, isn't it?
It's sort of. There's like a little cutout of the headstock, and the logo itself sort of moves with that cutout. It's hard to explain over radio, but it looks great, and it's kind of a Music Man style instrument, so it's fit with a single humbucker in the bridge position.
Right.
They had it as a standard line, and then it was discontinued as a standard line, and they reintroduced it as a signature model for
John Lahon.
Is that who it is?
Blackstone Cherry fella.
There's one for him. That's not the one I meant.
I have no idea then.
Oh, it's some metal band that I have no idea who they are. Anyway, it looks they're a band that I don't think are that big over here. I think they're one of those sort of American bands that have stayed in America, thing. But you get it in a satin black with a gloss black scratch plate, which I think looks amazing.
Looks a bit like they've put the wrong scratch plate on.
That sort of thing, or you can get it in gold, with a Pearl scratch plate.
Oh, wow.
And I just think that's really cool. But anyway, yes, back out of basses, as I'm sure less people want to hear about basses than guitars. That was always the sort of thing that I thought, you know, that you should
do. Yeah, yeah. I mean, apart from the one that shall not be named, it is a toss-up between that and waiting out for one of the new Schecter guitars that is going to be coming out at the end of the year. It's very, very... The Keith Marrow model, the six-string Keith Marrow model, is just so moving with me that I will own that guitar.
The finishes for the Keith Marrow are really interesting as well.
Oh,
the normal,
so
the trans white and the
cool.
black, and then the Lamborghini
orange. I want the Lamborghini orange. But they only do it as a seven-string, so I was a bit like, oh, man.
Yeah.
But Wes Howe, as I said before, my favourite guitar player, the guy that used to play in the band called The Faceless, he has just joined with Schecter Guitars, as I've said before as well, and on his Instagram, they've posted that he's going to be bringing out some sort of signature model towards the end of the year, and that, regardless if it works for me or not, is going to be the purchase I make, because he is my favourite guitar player, and I need to own that guitar. So I think on the premise of what I sell, I will be buying a Keith Marrow model, a six-string Keith Marrow model. And then after that, I shall wait until this Wes Howe model comes out, because I know it's happening, seeing as Schecter.
You're
and
never going to wait. Oh,
Something else will exist. But I mean, gap. I'm going to, from now, after I've made these sales, I'm going to try and make a conscious effort of keeping my guitars and then purchasing them, just saving and buying. I mean, I would buy the Keith Marrow one now, like today, considering we've been paid, but I'm going to America in August, so I can't just start splashing out money on guitars. So I need to sell my other ones.
I think we should move on and do some questions now, gents, because I think we've got quite a few this week.
Okay.
All of our questions come from our Facebook group.
Hello, guys.
facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. The first question comes from Peter, and he says, question for the podcast. Well, that's exactly what the group's for, Peter. Excellent. What is the most inspiring piece of gear you've ever owned? It could be a guitar, a pedal, or an amp, but something that made you play better, be more creative, or just made playing more enjoyable. Luke Taft.
My name's Ross.
What?
No, just a quick update, just quickly before you answer that question. Ibanez UK have just shared the guitar that I played. You know, I just done a recent video on the Ibanez.
Right.
S-Series 5570Q.
Okay.
And they've put a couple of pictures up on it and stuff like that. And someone said, stunning, saw Gak do a review earlier, and the person who's playing it is rather cool, and it's me. And then Ibanez UK have said, oh, we'll check it out. Yes, indeed, Ross at Gak is a tidy player.
I thought your name was Alan.
It's Alan Ross. To Jackson, I'm Alan. to Ibanez, I'm Ross. And to GAK, I'm Joss. So there you go.
Sweet.
Okay, well...
Sorry.
That's all right. Anyway, we'll go to you first, Alan Ross. what's the most inspiring piece of gear you've ever owned? It could be a guitar, pedal, amp, but something that made you play better, be more creative, or just made playing more enjoyable. Most inspiring.
My Gibson Les Paul Studio. My 90s Gibson Les Paul Studio. It's the most inspiring piece of equipment because it was my first ever proper guitar.
How long ago did you get that?
How old am I now? I'm 24 now. Started when I was 11, about 4 years into it. So about 16, 17 years old, I got it. Uh-huh. It's had the headstock break off like 3 times when I've taken it touring with me, and it's had it re-glued. One day I'd done a Dimebag Darrell on tour, and I used a clamp to keep the headstock to the neck, just to see if I could create some sort of tension, and it was both sides, so I had this clamp pulling it down both sides, and I managed to sit down on a chair and play half a show, and then I had to borrow another guitarist's stuff.
Cool.
So yeah, that guitar, because that was, as I said, my first proper guitar, so that's you know, that's got me to the playing level I'm at now, essentially.
I see. Luke Taft.
I think the first thing that sort of comes to mind is, sort of weirdly, the Electro Harmonix Super Ego. I don't know if anyone is familiar with these.
Why don't you explain the rough cut? Because it's quite a complicated...
Yeah, it's a really weird pedal. It's sort of... It sort of snatches a small element of what you've played and then keeps that looping. So it's essentially kind of like a reverb that just keeps going. And you can either set it to auto-latch, so you play in a note and it does that until you play another note that goes over another threshold. Or you can set it so that you play a note and then hold the foot switch down and it will hold that note and keep going until you take that switch off and then you can grab another note.
This was always my problem with the Super Ego. Yeah. I understood that as being the concept of it. Where is the practical application of
pedal? Find one. However, out of that pedal, I wrote several riffs that then became songs in the space of about 2 weeks.
Right.
I kept just playing around with it. This is why I was saying it's a bit of an odd one, but playing around with it just made me do quirky things that came out with completely different sequences of stuff that I would have ever played otherwise, and then they spurred me on to other ideas.
I guess so. It's actually an excellent choice in that regard, because it is such an unconventional pedal that just to use it in any way, you are going to have to be unconventional.
Yeah,
it's going to force you into trying something.
It made
new.
Me like the latch mode, which is the one where it grabs a note and holds it until you play another note that's over a certain volume threshold.
Right.
Just made me play in a totally different way, because you can't do any sort of clicky muting with like your right hand to sort of pick muted strings, because obviously that'd kill the note that's holding.
I see.
So to deaden a note, rather than sort of clacking your right hand into the strings and muting them, you have to mute with your left hand and just pull the strings off, sort of let go slightly, and then when you want it to deaden, you hit it with your right hand. So although it doesn't translate into the sound directly, you have to play around with how you're playing, and just through it kind of throwing my whole playing style.
It's more like technique wise as well as actually is actually ideas wise, it forces you into
There are loads of riffs that originally had all these drones and stuff sitting underneath them, and then I went, actually, that sounds terrible, but the riff's still quite cool. So I've then written those into several of the songs that my band are working on at the moment.
Oh, amazing.
Sweet. Excellent.
So, that was fun. And
excellent. Okay, well, yes. I'll tell you what, I'll answer the question as well, even though I think mine's a bit boring, but I imagine most people's are going to be a bit boring, because you know, when you think of, if you're trying to think of the most inspiring piece of equipment, I know that Luke obviously thought of something rather different, but I guess I'd automatically go for the thing that I loved the most that just sort of kept me playing. And it was about a decade ago, on my 21st birthday, my girlfriend, I lived in Chichester at the time, a small sort of village town outside.
A small fishing port.
A small fishing port called Chichester.
Just below the A of Atlantic in the ocean.
And after a day of fishing, I fished a guitar out of the sea, and really that was it for me. No, but what actually happened, my girlfriend went, got the train all the way to Brighton to go to GAK long before I worked for GAK, and
just sowing the seeds.
Yeah, exactly. And she bought me a 50s series precision bass, which is the very one I had refinished the other day into a two-tone Sunburst. In fact, Luke, you did a little bit of work on it for me as well. You fit a new pickup for it probably a year ago, something like that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Good pickup.
Great pickup. But
even better fitting.
Sorry?
Even better fitting.
Yeah, exactly.
Does it still work, by the way?
It still works, yeah. Sweet. Yeah. That's still the pickup in there. Yeah, it's great.
Fantastic.
So it was a 50s series P bass that she got me in Fiesta Red, which at the time was my least favourite colour. it also had a gold anodized scratch plate, which to this day I think is an awful combination with Fiesta.
Anodized gold is great.
Oh, anodized gold is great. Don't get me wrong, I've still got that plate on the two-tone Sunburst bass, right, which it now is.
That's fine.
But just what a horrible mix. But nonetheless, despite the fact that I hated the look of it, it was the coolest sounding, like best playing bass. I think I she bought it for me a week before I had to go into the studio. And when I went into the studio, in there was an old late 70s Rickenbacker 4001. My band wanted me to play on the Rickenbacker because obviously it was so much more prestigious than a Mexican built Fender. Mm. So I doubled up a riff, played it on my P bass, and then played it on the Rickenbacker, and the engineer played them back to me, and I blind chose the P bass.
When you say blind chose, I mean
obviously they sound very different.
Yeah,
I mean, no, he's like Spider-Man, he can see the sound.
Right.
It is a very different sound. So yes, it was recognizable as the P bass, but nonetheless it sounded better in the context of everything.
It was like I was reading something a while back about Grace Potter. I've never heard of her before, but she did a signature Flying V.
Mm.
And she was saying that when they needed to get some new gear for the band, they were sort of going out trying loads of stuff, and she was trying loads of guitars, and she kept choosing stuff based on image, and she was worried that she was going to choose a Flying V just because they look cool. So she was like, no, actually, I'm going to do a blind test. So she reckoned she sat there and played a load of guitars with a blindfold on, and her band gave her guitars and she'd play them, and then she'd give them back without knowing what they were.
Surely you would know what you were holding.
It's like, I mean,
hold on.
A Flying V doesn't feel at all similar to any other guitar.
What am I holding?
Yeah.
You know?
Was it? I mean,
there's a big V shape in my hand. Yeah. This must be a Les Paul.
So, yeah, that I've always.
Well, that doesn't
one
work.
Of the most ridiculous blind tests most... I've ever heard.
Yeah.
What a waste of a blindfold. Okay, yeah. Ross on our Facebook group says, has anyone had any experiences of Charvel's ProMod SoCal Style 1HH series?
Yes.
Boys, have you? I have to say, when we started listing these, I was doing some work for the company actually listing them on the website and uploading the photos and everything. And I did the whole Charvel range when they turned up. And I thought the SoCals were the coolest thing.
Because they're bright green. Yeah. Or they're available in bright green.
Yeah, they're available in bright. But they are ridiculously cool guitars.
Very, very cool guitars. I mean, the one thing, the biggest change that I saw in the guitars was when they were stopped. Blah, 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 blah.
When they stopped and reversed mid-podcast.
Yeah, of course. Sorry about that. When they stopped building them in Japan and started building them in Mexico.
Right.
Like they are now. They're not Japanese-built guitars anymore. They're Mexican-made.
Do you want to give the listeners an overview of what the SoCal is?
Okay. Well, essentially, the SoCal is like a Super Strat. It's a Charvel guitar. So it's like a Super Strat guitar, double humbucking, double locking trem system, Floyd Rose, maple neck, you know, that sort of thing. It looks like a Strat.
It looks exactly like a Strat. I mean, the body shape's the same. The headstock's the same.
Yeah, but like proper old school 80s Super Strat.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Strat shape, Strat headstock, but hotter pickups, yeah. Floyd. Yeah.
Floyd.
Before they started churning out the Mexican ones and we were getting them in store, we had the last of the Japanese stuff and we were selling it unholy cheap. And Dave, who works in the store, he managed to pick up one of the last ones in black. It comes in a hard case, Japanese-made quality, and it's just outrageous, this guitar. It's absolutely awesome. Comes with Damasio's pickups in there as well, and a real Floyd Rose, not a licensed Floyd Rose.
The Mexican ones still come with Damasio's.
They do. Yeah, they still come with Damasio's, yeah. I don't know if it's a real Floyd Rose or if it's a licensed buy. I'm not too sure about that.
I think they're the 2000 series.
Yeah.
Which are the sort of... Which might have been the ones that were always on them.
Yeah.
They're like the Easter-made official Floyd Roses.
Oh, okay.
They're the ones
okay.
I think they tend to use on that sort of
sure,
price.
Sure, sure.
Guitar in
That's
general.
Fair enough. That's fair enough.
But are you sure they're still Damasio's? Because I thought they were Duncan's.
Oh.
Oh, they might have changed over then.
Maybe they are. They're definitely a branded pickup.
They are, yeah, definitely, yeah.
It shows how good I was at listing.
But to answer his question, yes... We have tried them, and they're awesome guitars, whether it be Japanese or Mexican. The only shame is the Mexican ones don't come with a hard case now, and the Japanese ones did. But they're awesome, awesome guitars.
Yeah, excellent value for money from Charvel, as Charvel tends to be across the board.
I've not played a SoCal, although I have played a San Dimas HS. Nice.
San Dimas is wicked.
Very hard tail model.
Yeah.
And you can get like single coil in the neck, humbucker in the
back. They're Seymour Duncans, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because it's got definitely a Seymour Duncan, whatever it is, in the neck.
Yeah, I forget.
A quarter pounder or something. Must be something a little bit hotter.
They're wicked.
I've actually done a video demo on it.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah, like ages and ages ago when I wasn't working up here in the office on the marketing team. I done one with our ex-colleague Mark Packham, because he was recording at the time.
Yeah.
And when I was working in the store, and we'd done a load of Jackson and Charvel stuff, and I'd done a video on that, so you can check it out on our YouTube.
Yeah, I just really like the humbucker in the bridge single coil in the neck.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's a wicked idea.
With three-way switch, so it's really easy to use. Five-way switches I find a bit finicky sometimes.
That's exactly why you play Strats, right?
Yeah, it's why I've unconnected the middle pickups. But yeah, three-way toggle, and then the neck humbucker, the neck single coil, just so it sounds like a Strat, and then bridge humbucker, so it sounds nice and chunky.
Yeah. Mm.
Fixed bridge, great. I think they're wicked guitars.
Very cool.
Yeah, totally wicked. Right, Will says, is there such a thing as the right guitar? Question mark.
No.
I ask because quite a few times now I've bought or even custom-made a guitar that suited me perfectly, but I go off them relatively quickly. I find all the flaws in them and I stop enjoying them so much. Have I just not found the right guitar for me? Question mark. Do any of you lot have this problem too? Question mark. Have you found your perfect guitar? Question mark.
Was that a secret me? Was that me in a parallel universe sending us an email?
Ah.
Is
this how you feel,
John? Yes, 100%. 100%.
I weirdly have found the one, and I still keep looking for another one.
I mean, I think that's a trait within us all. Yeah,
thankfully you don't have to be monogamous with guitars.
Mm.
You can.
I don't think I have quite yet, and I think there is. There's probably a guitar that is, you know, that's going to hit like a 95% being right for you. I actually don't think you can. I think you'd be very lucky to get it from custom building something, because you have to custom build so blind. Both of you have actually ordered custom built guitars or made guitars. Like your Strat, Rosewood Neck Strat, that you're unhappy with, and you had a Telecaster, a custom built one that you were unhappy with.
I've made loads of guitars over the years, either out of bits or out of other bits that I've already had, or I've made a couple of bodies.
Yeah.
And yeah, the only ones I've liked for reasons other than the reasons I built them, if you sort of see what I mean. And you sort of make them and they end up a bit different, and then you go, actually, that's really good for a different reason. And kind of, unless you've got a luthier that's doing it for you that really can interpret what you want and might have the balls to sit there and go, actually, I think you need this, or you need this.
Yeah.
Or you're just totally in tune with what you want.
Yeah.
Then it's just a bit.
But blind. I think, as you said, you have to be very lucky to find the 100% guitar. I don't think you can find it. I mean, unless, you know, people can definitely prove me wrong 100% on that. But I think you can't find the guitar that resonates with you perfectly.
I think you can get damn close. I think you can get damn close.
Yeah, yeah.
I think one of the biggest problems with custom design stuff is actually an error that I think you made just more than Luke, which was what was the body material of the guitar?
Indian rosewood.
And how many guitars have bodies made of Indian rosewood? It is kind of the thing I'm getting at. It's like there's a reason that guitars are 90% older.
It was chambered mahogany.
Right.
But I think the whole thing was that it was chambered mahogany.
Wasn't it a Koa top?
Yeah, then it was a Koa top, right. And then it was a solid rosewood neck with humbuckers. So it was
What guitar was this?
It was a Warmoth Telecaster I built.
Ah, right.
So all of these pieces, all these woods were like no top end whatsoever, and it being chambered.
Yeah.
So there was no colour to it whatsoever. Well, it was just dead.
That's kind of what I think. I think the woods that are used on standard model guitars are used because they, for a specific reason, they tick more boxes than most of the others. And I think when people go for a custom build, it's such a temptation to try to have something that no one else has.
Yeah.
But there is a very good reason that everyone uses the same stuff.
Yeah.
It just sounded like I couldn't roll off the mids with that thing.
Yeah.
It was just like the whole time it was just like
Well, that's possibly had a place.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, let's do one more question then before we wrap everything up.
We did we did answer that question from Will, right?
We did. We said that we think that I mean, you know, you don't think 100%. I think there is. I think you just got to be in tune. I kind of agree with Luke. I think you just got to be, well, I mean, you were saying about custom shop designers being in tune, but I think you've just got to be in tune with what is right for you.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you only get that through trying lots of stuff. And
similarly, there might not be one guitar, there might be three guitars for you.
No.
And it might be true that you use each one for a different thing.
Yeah, exactly. I flick between P basses and jazz basses, which are, I mean, both, you know, passive Fender basses, but very, very different feeling and weighing instruments.
Yeah. Well, that's quite interesting, because I tend to flick between guitars that sound different but feel the same.
Oh, I see.
I want them tonally to do different things, but I get so used to playing sort of one guitar at a time that I sort of lock into that. It's like I used to have a big collection of Ibanez RGs, but then I spent so long playing my Strat that I went back to my RGs and just the neck was too wide and too flat. So I ended up flogging them all just because I just couldn't get on with them. And it was either get used to the RGs again and then not be able to play the Strat, or just keep playing the Strat and make more.
Yes, cool. Yes. Well, okay,
the last question.
Where should we go for? Okay, actually, do you know what? They're both quite short. I'm going to see if we can get through these last two. So Paul says, what are the limitations of short-scale guitars like Jaguars? Should I just get a Jazzmaster instead?
I'd say yes, because Jazzmasters are brilliant.
They're much cooler than a Jaguar.
I love Jaguars. I think they are the best guitar. But the question really is about the limitations of short-scale.
Tuning stability, maybe?
Yeah, tuning stability. You've got to play heavier strings.
So why would you have a short scale?
They make your hands feel bigger. That's the important thing. You can get more stretch.
It's very much a different feel from a short scale guitar. Yeah. And yeah, I guess you have the ability to have heavier gauge strings without a massive increase in tension.
Yeah, meatier tone.
Yeah.
Shorter scale, heavier strings, you've got more mass working in the magnetic field of the pickup. So yeah, you get all of that. And yeah, as I say, you get the bigger stretch, so it's like you've got a bit more flexibility in your hand. And some cording is easier. Some people find it a bit different in terms of sort of fret positions and things.
Well, I mean, that for me sounds like there are great advantages to a Jaguar over Jazz. So what made both of you say Jazzmaster off the bat?
The problem with Jaguar, well, the problem with Jazzmasters as well, is that the strings fall off.
Oh, the bridges, yeah.
Yeah, once you've
changed
it
to a Mustang bridge and then you're fine, yeah.
Or by a classic player and they've already got a tune-o-matic on there. And the tailpieces moves up closer, so the brake angle over the bridge is better, and then they're less likely to pull out the saddles.
Yeah.
The switching is a bit weird on Jaguars.
You can get used to it, though. It's not
you can. I mean most
there's
players,
a reason that most people tape it over.
Yeah, most players tape it over or just take it out.
Yeah.
It's a good idea, but I think it's one of those things that was a great idea that no one really uses.
Yeah.
But then HH Jaguars have that nice sort of, you've got the selective coil taps on the two rollers on the top, so you can dial back one of the two coils. Which is quite
interesting. Like the Kurt Cobain signature.
Yeah.
Oh, does that have that?
No, that's all been ripped out.
Oh, has it?
Yeah,
of course it has.
It's just got a three-way selector switch on it.
Oh, right.
Kurt Cobain doesn't want, didn't want.
Can you imagine Kurt Cobain trying to sit there going, right, I'm going to coil tap here.
Right, so guys, we're going to do In Bloom.
Yeah.
And in the little break, I'm going to go back to a single coil. What do you think about that?
Joss, why did you say a Jazzmasters as well?
I think I just prefer Jazzmasters.
Do you prefer that on a scale?
Definitely, yeah, definitely. I think I do.
But isn't a Jaguar the same scale as a Les Paul?
No.
25 and a half.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I to be honest, I don't know enough about short scale length guitars to cast a fair judgment, but I would say that just out of preferring Jazzmasters as well. So
I think for me as well, it's a preference.
It's just
thing.
The sound.
Yeah. Sound. I prefer the pickups in them. I mean, you get people that are a player of one or a player of the other. So, I mean, if you've not played them, go to a shop and play a Jaguar and play a Jazzmaster and see what you think.
Yeah.
Have an offset day.
Yeah, exactly.
Just play anything.
Throw a bass six in there.
Yeah, totally. Go for a bass six. Jacob, a jazz master, maybe you play a marauder.
Baritone, one of those baritone jazz masters, the mushroom burst finish ones.
Mushroom burst.
That's what it's called.
Antigua burst.
Antigua burst.
All of those, they'd be good. Maybe a Baracha. Oh, no, they were the Strats, the luchadors.
Yeah.
No, was it that way around? Oh, it doesn't matter.
There's loads of stuff you
can do. Okay, anyway, last question. We'll wrap this up after this last question. Ryan says, what is the lowest tuning that you can reasonably put a guitar in? And what sort of string gauge do I need to get it there?
So my colleague behind me who works in picking, Adam, will know this far
picking,
better than...
I mean, warehouse picking. Guitar picking.
Yeah. He will know this.
He incidentally, he plays like extended range though, doesn't he?
Adam plays seven string guitars.
I think, as it's not specified, let's talk about sixes.
Six string. Let's go with, I don't know, I'd say the lowest tuning that I've put my guitar into to, say, mess around with, like, a song or something like that. Maybe drop
Z.
Yeah. Realistically, drop A.
Yeah.
I mean, realistic for me, that's as low as I'd want to go before it starts getting stupid, like you have to start drilling out the machine head holes and stuff like that for thicker strings. Like the guys from Architects, I think some of their songs, the E string is in drop A, and he has like a 68 gauge or close to 70 for that
string.
Dario
do 80?
Yes.
I think Ernie Ball do, so you can go down to an 80
gauge. That's the A string on my bass.
Yeah. That's for like, we're talking...
That's unbelievable.
Well, some six-string guys like Black Tongue, like their metal band, are dropping their guitars or Torch to E. Like, so an octave down.
Yeah, you can drop your low E string down an octave.
That is true, but the other it's thing to very worth... much a drone string at that point. It's not practical.
Yeah.
I mean, and the other thing to mention that is the ratio of whine to core is different between guitar strings and bass strings, so the tension is different. Although it's an 80, it's not exactly the same as...
I didn't realise that.
Oh. Yeah, you can't just pick
it's the core that carries the tension, which is why you get like thin core guitar strings. Like I think it's the Dunlop. They do like an extra flexi set or something. I think they call them super brights.
Right.
Which have got a thinner core, so they feel less heavy.
Okay, but fair enough. So we reckon G's not achievable.
A G is achievable, but as I was saying, Adam is a seven-string player, and he plays some of his songs in G, the seventh string down to a G, and that's on a seven string, and that's a very thick string on his seventh string.
But yeah, right. Well, I mean, when I used to play seven-string back in about 2001.
Yeah.
There were not seven strings in 2001.
Yeah, the RG7620. It was the first thing Ibanez released below the Universe. It was... like the affordable seven string, and it came out and it was £1,000.
Mm. Do you know that Jay Cross's first electric guitar was a seven string?
Of course it was.
Yeah.
My God.
To be fair, I actually thought it was an eight string fan fret.
Yeah. I've already promised that we'd have James Singer next week, but the week after we should definitely get Jay Cross on just to make it all about. We'll seven do a seven strings. String special.
Yes, please.
But yeah, I mean, I used to play seven string because obviously the low on that is B, and you can drop that down to A without a problem.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, like, is it heavy low though that play in drop F?
On
maybe that is on a seven string.
On
or something.
A seven string, I mean, I've heard bands doing it on a seven string, but
it's either them or like See You Next Tuesday or someone where the bassist tunes up.
Yeah.
That's so amazing.
They're actually playing in the same range.
Oh, that's great. Like,
what's the point?
Brilliant. Okay, well thank you very much, guys. Ryan, I hope that answers your question about
or rambles on about it for a while at least.
Exactly, yes, quite. Thanks very much for tuning in again, everyone. I will announce on the Facebook group which one of you were quickest to the punch to write Plectrum on the wall, so we can send out some packs of Plectrums to you. Well done, everyone who realised. I'm sorry for the confusion it obviously caused for the people that didn't listen to the podcast quite as soon as some of the others. I should have probably come up with a cleverer. And there it is. I should probably have come up with a cleverer phrase rather than just Plectrum, as it did cause some confusion, so sorry for that. But thanks for tuning in again. Make sure you continue to post on our group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. Ask us any questions on there, give us any ideas for subjects that you would like us to talk about on the podcast group, and we will endeavor to do that. Next week we'll have James Singer, the Fender expert for the store, in, and we'll be talking about all the new Gretches and the cool new stuff that Fender are putting out at the moment. Luke Taft, how can people get in touch with you?
Luke.taft@gack.co.uk.
There you go. And if you want to get in touch with Joss Allen?
On Instagram, Joss_Allen. Search for me on there. And obviously, ask me any questions on the Gack Vision page under any of the videos that I've done, and at gak.co.uk. Joss.Allen@gak.co.uk.
There you go. You made it in the end. Well done.
I got there.
You can, of course, email me as well on joe.branton@gak.co.uk, or get me on Twitter at Yosef_900. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. See you later.
Cheers, guys. Bye.
Hello and welcome to the third episode in...
Wicker, 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 wild, wild, wild west.
James West, Desperado.
Rough Rider, no, you don't got nada. None of this six-gun in this, mother running this.
I used to have the CD and the poster.
Amazing. I always preferred Men in Black.
Oh, I preferred Wild Wild West because it was cowboys.
I just quite like men.